Hi, this is Darcy Lowen, The Chainsaw, and you're listening to the Sixth Sense Podcast.
Thank God the season is over. Welcome back to the most irreverent Senators podcast on the internet. Tim, it's Pittsburgh.
It is. It's not like, getting sprayed with a cold hose. We kind of known for a little bit that it might be. So we've had some time to adjust here.
Yeah, Bruce Garriott dropped that bombshell last week.
Yeah, when
we didn't buy in at the time, but, you know, it ended up being true.
Well, there's still 2 points difference between the Penguins and New Jersey. Anything could have happened. It didn't, but... So here we are. Pittsburgh, not a bad draw. We've got a long playoff history with Pittsburgh.
Definitely not a good draw, though.
No.
What do you think the Senators' psyche will be? Or not even the Senators. This city's psyche will be if, let's say, Ottawa doesn't win.
I think
is that devastating, or should we just be, you know, like, this is a tough draw, right? What should our expectations be?
They're going to be calling for heads, just like every other year.
Doesn't matter.
No, nothing's going to change.
Sensationalism will rule.
Yep, all the same people who, you know, every June, May, April, whenever it may be at that particular year.
The Bills and Bobs from Renfrew call in.
Yep.
Screaming bloody murder.
No kidding. Jason Spezza is going to be traded so many times before draft day, he won't even know what hit him. But that's what I expect. And actually, what's more interesting is the playoff climate in Ottawa right now. It's not even playoff fever. It's just more of a little sniffle. Right?
Well, I think overshadowing that whole thing has been Alfredson's 1,000th game. But now that's over, it's like, all right, now we have to focus. Even I found last night, during last night's Buffalo game, the team was never really in it. It would just kind of seem like a foregone conclusion once Buffalo got up 2-0. You know, it's just shut it down, make sure everybody gets out of this game healthy.
Yep, maybe people were a little timid after what happened to Alex Kovalev.
Except for Andy Sutton's hit on
unbelievable
Drew Stafford. Yeah, that was awesome.
I was kind of... As soon as that hit happened, I was just so worried that he was going to get called for an elbow or a headshot, whatever it may have been. But thankfully, he didn't. It was a clean hit and a good one at that.
So, yeah, Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh.
What are your thoughts?
Well,
besides it being a tough draw.
Yeah, it's a tough draw. The obvious stuff, right? Crosby, Malkin, Staal. He's a big sense killer. Fleury. I mean, we all know what these players are capable of. They're the defending Stanley Cup champions. They swept Ottawa 2 years ago. But there's a lot of X factors going on in this as well, right?
Like, well, they split the regular season.
Yeah.
I don't think they've played since early January,
It's been a while for sure.
So I don't think they've played each other since we've acquired Andy Sutton or Matt Cullen. We haven't played each other since Kovalev mailed it in.
Yep. Well, considering our long history with the Penguins, there's not really too much of a bitter rivalry despite meeting in the playoffs.
Well, no Gary Roberts, though.
Yep.
And that's kind of different from those years, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose. Chris
Matt Neal. Cook. Matt Cook's dead.
Well.
He could be after that one-punch knockout.
No kidding. I think that's one area that you can really look at when you match these two teams up and say Ottawa has a clear advantage over the Penguins because of their size and their physical play. How far that's going to get them, I'm not sure, but it's certainly one of the most physical teams that we've sent into the playoffs. One element that we've been clamoring for years as fans, right?
Well, I think Ottawa also has that kind of like the mental, we're the underdogs, we're out to prove the world wrong. Like, yeah, Pittsburgh, who's been in the Cup Finals the last 2 years, they could be tired. They could be complacent.
An underdog with a cocky attitude is one of the most dangerous things in professional sports, right?
Yeah, Ottawa's got nothing to lose at this point.
And this isn't really a normal mentality for us, right? We've usually gone to the playoffs as a fairly high seed. Other years, we've just even been lucky to squeak in at the end, right? And we kind of knew what was happening with Pittsburgh 2 years ago when it did, right? There was no surprises there. But this is a new thing for us. And I'm really looking forward to see how the players respond and seeing which Ottawa Senators team actually shows up.
Well, you made a good comment off the air before we even started that Ottawa had this grit factor. And they have the agitators that Pittsburgh might not have now that Cook's out. You know, they have the Rutus, the Neils, the Fishers. Even guys like Mahalik can get dirty once in a while, you know, and just start banging some bodies and punishing their opposition. So maybe if it goes to a long series, that works out in Ottawa's favor. I think the longer it goes, the more it benefits Ottawa.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Look at the entire defense, right? Save for maybe Erik Karlsson, who even isn't shy with the body. And then you look at the hard forecheckers that Ottawa has, like Peter Regan. I don't know about you, but I've really noticed him increasing his physical play, and it's made him a much more effective hockey player, and maybe that's one of the things keeping him on that top line.
Penalty killing, that's going to be huge for Ottawa,
mm-hmm.
especially now that Gonchar's healthy.
Oh, Ottawa's also insanely good at killing penalties too, right?
Killing their own power plays, yeah. They do that awfully well too.
No kidding. Almost.
Actually, it's getting better though. I shouldn't slag it.
Well, the bench minor stuff has come up a bit again recently as well. What is it, 13 or 14 this year?
Yeah, James Gordon hasn't been too impressed.
No, he doesn't like that. And rightfully so. We haven't really seen Corey Kluson end up in the jeers column too often. But he's certainly made a few suspect moves over the past few games, right? Like, how do you feel about how do you feel about these guys not getting sat? Some of the older, more veteran guys, some of the more skilled guys. Do you think these guys should have been sat leading into the playoffs?
Well, I think Alfredson had to play against Florida, obviously. And then there were two games left in the season. Maybe you could have sat him against Tampa.
And he wanted to play too, right?
I don't know. It's just one of those damned if you do, damned if you don't, right? It's like Kovalev. Like, he could have been hurt in game one, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, like, you have a fair point. Like, they sat Volchenkov. They sat Brian Elliott for the last game of the season.
Yep.
So they took some steps, and it's a bit weird to notice that they didn't sit some of their older veterans like a Phillips or a Kovalev or an Alfredson just to protect their own assets moving forward in the playoffs. After that Mark Bell incident, after the Fedorov hit on Kovalev, we've been through it like two of the past 3 years. So, yeah, you roll the dice. But that's sports, right?
Yep, that is, and that's the way the playoffs are going to be, and that's just going to be one of the things we're going to have to deal with.
And Pittsburgh can be saying the same thing after Matt Cook got clocked.
Well, yeah.
And they still have to play this afternoon too, right?
Obviously, both those guys, Kovalev and Cook, very different players, but also very specialized players, and you never know how much an injury like that's going to hurt you. I always say that you win cups with guys like Matt Cook, as much as you may hate him or whatever. Those kind of guys are important to have on your team, and hell, they did win a cup with Matt Cook on their team, right? So it could be a big blow to them, and I'm actually looking forward to seeing Pittsburgh maybe get a little riled up, trying to get caught up playing Ottawa's game, taking some penalties. Could play out okay. I think if you're looking for a big upset in the first round, forget the fact that we're rabid Sens fans. I think you don't have to look any further than this series.
You think so?
Yeah, absolutely.
You think this is the cream of the crop?
No, I don't think this is the cream of the crop, but I think that this was, if there's going to be a big upset in the Eastern Conference at least, it's going to be Ottawa and Pittsburgh.
I just envision a long series, and I think that's why it's going to be entertaining. There's going to be a lot of drama and suspense, physical play, hopefully some bad blood at some point, right?
Yeah, Ottawa's got to fight every night to stay in this game, right? To stay in the series, and so it's probably going to go long.
Like, I'd like to hate someone on Pittsburgh more than I hate Crosby out of respect for how good he is, you know?
Yep, it'll be good for us too, right? And it's also nice to be able to see Sidney Crosby at least four times again.
And it'd be nice to knock them out of the playoffs.
It'd be fantastic. We owe them a few.
Yeah, no, exactly. They beat us twice. We owe them the favor.
So we also have Jeff Merrick coming on the show.
Yeah, that's right. We have two fantastic guests coming on this program this afternoon as part of our little playoff primer. Jeff Merrick from Hockey Night in Canada, he's coming on, and Greg Wyshynski, Puck Daddy from Yahoo Sports. So why don't we come back with Jeff Merrick, and after that we can talk a little Alexei Kovalev.
Sounds good to me.
All right.
Do it.
All right, listeners, we're back on the air with Jeff Merrick. He's the co-host of the iDesk on Hockey Night in Canada, and he's also the host for the Hockey Night in Canada radio program on Sirius Radio. Jeff, how are you doing?
Graham, Tim, what's going on, boys?
Just doing a radio show here. looking forward to some playoff hockey. Looking forward to some playoff hockey implication games this afternoon as well. That New York-Philly game is going to have everyone's attention.
Yeah, it certainly will. And, you know, bad news this afternoon for the New York Rangers. Ryan Callahan is out, and the big man, 6'11" or 6'12", Brian Boyle, will take his place. And that's a tough one for the Rangers, losing a stick and a body like Ryan Callahan, former Guelph Storm standout. I love this kid. I love the way Callahan plays. And one of these types of games, these, you know, sort of one and done, this is, you know, all the marbles. Let's all go all in playing poker here, boys. Guys like Ryan Callahan, guys like Chris Drury, guys like Mike Richards, that gets it done. So it's become a little more tougher for the Rangers, but if it comes down to a goaltending battle, who do you guys think wins this one between Henrik Lundqvist and Brian Boucher?
Oh, my money's definitely not on Boucher.
Not at all. I mean, you look at that last game on Friday, and you know, the first period was tentative and the second period just became downright sloppy. You know, it was just some ugly, ugly hockey. I mean, one of these two teams is backing into the playoffs, and I don't really think either one really necessarily deserves it. Having said that, someone's going on, and someone's going home. It's just a matter of who.
Assuming the Rangers actually sneak in, do you think that they pose perhaps a greater challenge to a team like Washington?
It's a great question, because when you have the goaltender, you always have a chance, right? It's like in any prize fight, whether it's boxing or UFC, if you're a puncher, you've got a puncher's chance. And in the game of hockey, as long as you have the goaltender and you have someone that can, you know, do the old stand on his head routine, the old Frank J. Calder line, you have a chance. You have a shot. I mean, how many times have we seen it before that, you know, goaltender X comes in and steals a series or steals two series, or in a case of 1986, steals a Stanley Cup? So it's not as if there's not historical precedent for it. If it is going to be, you know, the Rangers standing a better chance than the Flyers or the Montreal Canadiens or one of these bottom three, the Boston Bruins, you throw into that mix as well. It'll be because of the goaltender, and it'll be a lot of 2-1 games. It'll be a lot of 3-2 games. Rangers just can't score. And if it's not Gavrik, then it seems to be nobody. There's no sort of committee scoring on that team. There's no real second line to be spoken of or heard of. Jokinen is, you know, pulling his, you know, usual vanishing act, and you know, Avery is not Avery, and he's dinged up. And as you mentioned, Callahan is out. And as much as I love Brandon Dubinsky, you know, he's always sort of wanting more and wanting more. But you have the goalie. I mean, that becomes at a certain point a psychological barrier, and it usually takes about two games, at which point a team just sort of throws up its stick in frustration and says, "We just can't beat this guy." And that's how we're. In a seven-game series, you can watch a team get psychologically beaten down by a goaltender. So a long-winded answer, I know, guys, but as long as, you know, the Rangers have the goalie, and they do it, and Henrik Lundqvist, they still have that puncher's chance, I suppose.
Going back to frustrations and Olli Jokinen, his former team, Calgary, obviously they didn't sneak into the playoffs this season. As a Canadian team, they didn't make the playoffs. Neither did Edmonton or Toronto. Are there concerns with the CBC that not enough Canadian teams made it in the postseason? And I know
always.
And I know
always.
And I know Montreal and Ottawa aren't favored in their matchups in the first round too. So, are you concerned about your audience right now?
The best case scenario, you know, all Canadian teams are in, including the Toronto Maple Leafs, which really drives the viewership. Which, you know, as ridiculous as it may sound, the 29th place team in the National Hockey League really drives audience in Canada. And I can't speak for Scott Moore or Shirley Najak as far as sort of, you know, what draws are favorable. But as far as being the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, from an eyeballs point of view, you know, our mandate is to service Canada and service Canadian hockey teams and Canadian hockey players. And the fewer Canadian teams, the less audience will accrue. And it's, you know, nice to see, you know, Pittsburgh and Detroit in the Stanley Cup final 2 years in a row for the stories that it produces. But from a CBC mandate and from a CBC point of view, and TSN is the same way, and Sportsnet is, you know, exactly the same as well. You know, the bread and butter in Canada is Canadian teams. And as those teams fall off the playoff map, the viewership inevitably goes down.
Oh, absolutely. One thing I was really hoping for this year.
Ottawa, you got to have Ottawa get on a big run here, boys, is essentially what I'm saying. We'll get the whole country on board.
Yeah, I was looking forward to this year being the year that Toronto threw their support behind their friends from Ontario and really started to back us. What is the vibe like in Toronto right now, considering the year the Leafs have had, the offseason that's coming up, and all the speculation that surrounds the team? Has it kind of dampened the playoff energy in the city?
I think it has. I think that's a great point. I think it has. I think there's a real sort of malaise right now in Toronto specifically about hockey. There's a sort of apathy about the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think a lot of Leafs fans are still in wait-and-see mode to see what will happen with this Brian Burke-led team. I know that there are some people, some Maple Leafs fans that want to see a sacrifice made. Someone has, like in Calgary, the Calgary fans want to see someone hang for this season. I think Maple Leafs fans want to see someone like Ron Wilson lose his job. They want to see something shaken up again, because here's another year that the team hasn't made the playoffs. You know, Toronto is a hockey volcano, and right now it's demanding a virgin. And if it doesn't get that virgin, it doesn't get angry, it just gets bored. And that's kind of what we're seeing right now in Toronto. There's a frustration that sort of reached the level of apathy in Toronto, and that perhaps is even worse than being angry. When you just don't care, then you really have a problem. I mean, if your viewership is angry or, you know, upset at the franchise, that's one thing. At least they're still emotionally engaged in one way. But when they stop caring, that becomes an even bigger problem.
Have they decided to black out the NHL entry draft lottery results in Toronto yet?
That's hilarious. Yeah, it'll be that'll make for some awkward moments, won't it? When Peter Chiarelli goes up there, should it be 1, 2, or 3, and announces either Taylor Hall, Tyler Seguin, Erica Branson, Cam Fowler? You know, take your pick. The U.S. goalie may end up getting going higher than perhaps earlier expected. It'll make for some awkward moments, that's for sure. But I'll tell you what, if Phil Kessel hadn't sort of come on in the second half of the season as he did and demonstrated that this guy is probably a guaranteed 40-goal scorer year in and year out, there would have been some real eyebrows raised about what Peter Chiarelli is poised to announce come draft day in Los Angeles. Having said that, I mean, you guys know that, you know, job one on draft day for Brian Burke is to try to get a number one pick. And yes, the name Thomas Cabrelle is out there. And do I expect Thomas Cabrelle to be a Maple Leaf after the draft? Absolutely not. I think that's the piece that they're dangling. I think that will, I don't know, it'll be enough to get him up in the top five. But I think maybe you look at a situation where you see the Anaheim Ducks and what may or may not happen with Scott Niedermeyer. And if he ends up calling it a career, the Ducks will need to replace that offense and that puck-moving defenseman, because they still very much have a team that could be in competition for a playoff spot. And by way of their budget, they need to make the playoffs. So don't be surprised if Brian Burke goes back to his old pal Bob Murray and the Cabrelle deal gets done, perhaps with Anaheim, and perhaps with a first-round draft pick showing up in Toronto miraculously.
Is there a playoff matchup in the first round that you're looking forward to the most? I know they all haven't been set in stone yet, but is there one in particular that you're looking forward to?
I'm curious about the Sens and the Pens, to be honest with you. And at first blush, you may say to yourself, oh, well, it'll be Pens in a romp. But, you know, again, as we talked about goaltending, I want to see what Brian Elliott does in the postseason. I want to see what this new Jason Spezza does. And I want to see what Mike Fisher, whom I've always heard perhaps more than any other Ottawa senator in the postseason, I want to see what he can do this year. And this is the year that, more so than ever, we always saw the actual Mike Fisher. We always saw there are two types of players. There are players that exist in potentiality, and there are players that exist in actuality. And for most of this season, we saw Mike Fisher in actuality. We'd only seen that in playoff time with the guy, you know, every cliche applies, right? Leaves it all on the ice, 110%, all those things. I want to see Mike Fisher in the playoffs this year going head-to-head with Sidney Crosby. That one to me, because I'm not so much, you know, team versus team, I'm more sort of the sidebar stories within the game. I want to see Fisher head-to-head with Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin. That one really intrigues me, because I've never seen, I don't think any of us have, seen Mike Fisher play better hockey.
So we're talking about players here who can appear either as a fantasy or as a reality. Alexei Kovalev, he's been a really interesting guy to watch this year in Ottawa, watching the roller coaster ride, and now his season being done with a complete tear of the ACL. We were really hoping that he would be able to stand up in the playoffs and earn his keep, considering his salary and his somewhat off-year numbers-wise. How big a blow do you think it is for the Sens to lose Kovalev? Do you think he would have been a guy who would have been an impact player in the playoffs?
I think so, and it's a great question, too, because, you know, you may look at Kovalev, the enigmatic one, you know, only plays when he's inspired, only plays when there's an issue that he wants to solve for himself. I mean, how many times have we seen, you know, the flybys on a forecheck, or how many times have we seen, you know, get in over the blue line, little wrist shot at the net, and then go off on a line change. We've seen that plenty from Alexei Kovalev. But the one thing you can say about him is, in the playoffs, this guy's really good. I mean, this guy's basically a point-of-game player in the playoffs. He does take it to the next level, so to speak. Boy, I sound like a cliche today. But he does. I mean, he takes it to that next level in the playoffs. And I think this one really hurts the Ottawa Senators. I think most fans on first blush should say, listen, they haven't had Kovalev all season long. Why should it matter that he's not there in the playoffs? I think that's one of the players that, you know, Brian Murray and Corey Kluson was banking on having as far as being a offensive producer in the playoffs, because history dictates it. But this guy, at the end of the day, is just good in the playoffs. He just is. Regular season, sure, he hovers, he floats, you know, he sails out there. But come playoff time, this guy can dig in. And, you know, he can play a playoff-style hockey once he gets angry. I mean, you need to have Alexei Kovalev emotionally and physically engaged early in a series to get the best out of him. You know, he needs to get an elbow in the head or a stick in the face in game one. When that happens, Kovalev generally goes on a tear. So, yeah, I think it does. I think it really does hurt the Ottawa Senators more than it might appear at first blush, because he hasn't really been, you know, present and accounted for all season long. He's kind of been like, you know, Ferris Bueller in a lot of ways as teachers try to take attendance.
I guess you touched upon it a little bit. A lot of us Sens fans were thinking that Kovalev was just kind of mailing it in, saving himself for the playoffs, and no, we'll never really have the opportunity to watch him play until maybe next year. Is there a person that you would expect to step up and fill his absence in the next week or two?
For the Ottawa Senators?
Yeah.
Oh, boy, that's a heck of a question. And, you know, the knee-jerk once upon a time would have been Milan Mihalik, wouldn't it? And, you know, you're just sort of waiting for that guy, but now with the injury woes. And I know it's a different position, but Jason Spezza is just a different hockey player this year. Once Jason Spezza learned how to play without Danny Heatley, I would argue he became a more complete player. And now without Alex Kovalev in the lineup, and I know it's a different position at center, it's not wing, I'm curious to see how Jason Spezza sort of sucks up and says, now this is more about my offensive production than ever before. And if anything is going to encourage Jason Spezza to shoot more, and you guys know as well as I do, this guy's got a hammer for a shot, it's Corey Kluson constantly pounding into him that, Jason, we just lost another stick in the lineup. We need you to shoot more. So even though the positions are different, I'm curious to see how Jason Spezza compensates for the lack of Alex Kovalev's offensive production.
What path do you think the Pittsburgh Penguins are going to take in terms of game strategy against the Senators? What are going to be the keys for success for the Penguins in this series?
Well, for Pittsburgh, it's all about scoring off the rush. And I think, you know, if players like Volchenkov or Ding, and if they can get Chris Phillips away from Sidney Crosby, then I think the plan is not so much, you know, to dump it in and grind it out down low, which the Penguins can do, but I think it's scoring off the rush. And that's the one thing that outside of the Washington Capitals, the Pittsburgh Penguins perhaps do better than anyone in the Eastern Conference. So it'll be an exciting series. Specifically, if the Penguins are allowed to play their game. We've got my dog barking at the door. I apologize, guys. Yes, I know. They don't like what I'm talking about. They're Sens fans as opposed to Penguins fans. Calm down, boys. Playoffs don't start till Wednesday. I think what the Penguins will try to do is look to use their speed more than anything else against the Ottawa Senators. Scoring off the rush is key for the Penguins. Not so much that classic playoff, grind it out, dump it down low, work along the wall, and try to feed it out to the middle. I think it's all about scoring off the rush for the Pens.
You mentioned the Washington Capitals. It was about a week ago that RJ Umberger came out with that quote in the Columbus Dispatch that talked about how Washington wouldn't be able to stack up with most of the teams in the Western Conference because of their offensive flair and their inattention for defense. Do you think that's a valid point? And does any team in the East have a chance to beat a Western Conference team? Because Washington seen as the cream of the crop, so to speak.
Well, you know, the thing about what RJ Umberger said was, until someone proves him wrong, he's right. I mean, you can. I know Boudreau gets frustrated. I know Cap's PR goes berserk when anyone mentions, you know, the lack of, you know, defensive detail the Washington Capitals put in their game in the postseason. But it's all true. And you can throw regular season stats out from this season where the Penguins, or the Capitals rather, have been fantastic defensively, but that's regular season. So until someone shows me otherwise with the Washington, well, until the Washington Capitals show me otherwise in the postseason, what RJ Umberger said as of right now is true. It's a bitter pill for the Caps and their fans and their PR directors to swallow, but it's kind of true, don't you think? I mean, when RJ Umberger said that, I know it raised a big storm on the internet, but I don't know, was he saying something that we hadn't heard all season long, guys? I mean, we've heard it and said it and talked about it for a couple. I mean, you look at that Game 7 against the Pittsburgh Penguins last year, right? What happened? The Caps didn't know how to play defense. They just shut down. When Marc-Andre Fleury made that one save against Alexander Ovechkin on the breakaway, the Caps fell apart. No, they did, and they just didn't know how to play shutdown. They didn't know how to play kitty bar the door. They didn't know how to get down to winning a playoff-style game, which is 2-1 or 3-2. They didn't know how to adapt. Now, have they learned the lesson? I hope so, because I'd like to see the Washington Capitals, to be honest with you, rewarded for that style of play. You know, like, I put the pom-poms away years ago, like cheering for teams. Like, I don't cheer for teams anymore. There are some players that I like, and I just want to see a good hockey game at the end of the day, but wouldn't it be nice to see the Washington Capitals win the Stanley Cup this year? Not because I'm married to the Caps in any way, shape, or form, but I love the style of play. You know, I love that wide-open hockey, you know, that river hockey, that, you know, wide-open, you know, gunning-for-it kind of hockey game. Because as we've seen before, whatever one team does to success, general managers try to ape the following year, right? So Carolina wins the Stanley Cup, right, out of the lockout. All of a sudden it becomes about foot speed, foot speed, foot speed. A year later, the Anaheim Ducks win it, and everyone's got to go get a gorilla on the bench. And it's got to be, oh, it's toughness, and it's Broad Street Bullies again. You know, wouldn't it be wonderful to see more teams in the NHL play like the Washington Capitals? You know, that wide-open style, that free-flowing, that great skating, that explosive goal scoring, that type of style of game, that wide-open sort of let's drop the puck and whoever has six goals is going to win because the other team has five. I'd like to see that rewarded somewhere down the line as opposed to just a, you know, hey, whoever can play the best 2-1 style of hockey, which was the final score we saw last year, Detroit versus Pittsburgh. I'm kind of growing weary of that type of playoff style being successful. We understand why it is. I just like, you know, for once to see some wide open river hockey finally rewarded. Now, do I see a team in the Eastern Conference being successful this year? I don't know. I still think the better hockey is in the West. I still think the better teams are in the West. I still think the better defense is in the West. I think the better goaltending is in the West. I see the better playoff style hockey being played in the West, but injuries are always a factor. Luck is always a factor as well. Health is at a premium. I don't think it can happen. I think going back to the Western Conference this year, but we'll see. I just hope the Capitals win more than anything else because I love that style of play.
Well, hopefully the Capitals can learn from history and see what mistakes the Ottawa Senators, who played a very similar style all throughout.
It's a fun style. It's a fun style, isn't it? Like, I wish, you know, and at times you've seen Ottawa play like that, too. You know, when 11 and 19 are cooking, man, it's fun to watch. It's great hockey. It's a real ball. But you can understand why coaches go back to that shell kind of game.
I would have loved to have seen those Senators teams maybe with a little bit more of a leash, and I would have liked to have seen what would have happened had they not had Jacques Martin as a coach for those years, too.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, a lot of it is dictated by the coach. You're right about that. And you look at the way that that Jacques Martin coaches and his philosophy of play. It's certainly different than Bruce Boudreau. And you just have to look no further than how Bruce Boudreau coached, or how Bruce Boudreau played, rather. I mean, he was a wide-open sort of, you know, a wave at the puck at center ice and hope for the breakaway, and let's just play pond hockey all game long. It would have been interesting because I'm with you. I always felt that given the talent that the Ottawa Senators had and the personnel they had in their lineup, whether it was Alfredson or Hossa or Spezza or Chara or Wade Redden, take your pick, I always thought that the style of play was wrong for the quality of player that they had. I think they could have played a more explosive, wide-open, run-and-gun type of game as opposed to just a grinded-out 2-1 affair.
Just for the record, for our listeners, I just wanted to say that seeing Patrick Lalime face about 40 to 50 shots a night would have scared the hell out of me.
as long as it wasn't Joe Nieuwendyk shooting, you would have been fine.
We would have seen a lot more of those 6-5 games there.
That would have been a fun ride. I mean, hey, listen, if you're going to lose anyway, you know, why not have fun? Sam Kinison always said, if you're going to miss heaven, don't miss it by 2 inches. So, you know, if you're going to miss it, really miss it, because you're still going to miss.
All right. Usually at the end of these interviews, we do a little quick hits. Are you interested,
sure.
Jeff? Okay.
Always, yeah, man.
My first question, you probably already talked about it, but how would you describe Don Cherry's outfit from last night? I believe those were Gerber daisies.
Oh, those were outstanding. You know what the best part about that outfit was? And everyone focuses in on the flowers. You know what was great about his outfit last night? That purple tie was killer. That purple tie was, as we say in Montreal, the bestseller, la première étoile, the first star, ladies and gentlemen. I love that purple tie. Only a couple guys can pull off a purple tie, and Grapes is one of them.
I think Pierre LeBrun was wearing a purple tie last night, too, wasn't he?
Oh, was he rocking? I was too distracted by his tight around the ears haircut. That old he had that old. Remember when Mike Tyson started rocking guys, and he had that sort of Jack Dempsey type haircut. That's what Pierre was going for last night.
Oh, Jeff, when you're prepping for the iDesk, what sites do you typically tend to gravitate towards?
Everything starts on Twitter these days. Everything starts on Twitter, and Scott Morrison, it's funny, you know, as you sort of play snakes and ladders and trail back as to which sites you're going to and where you find things, it's interesting, you know, whenever I wake up in the morning, the first thing I do is Twitter, because I think everyone now uses it as a wire service. So everything, sort of every story sort of starts there, you know, tiny URL links from all over different Twitter accounts will send you sort of all over the Internet, but it seems more and more week in and week out that everything begins, it doesn't end there, but everything begins on Twitter. So that's the first line of defense for me and Scotty.
All right. This past week in Ottawa, we just celebrated Daniel Alfredson's 1,000th game as an Ottawa Senator. What is your favorite Daniel Alfredson moment?
When he faked throwing the stick in the stands at the Air Canada Center after Matt Sundin was suspended for doing the same. That to me was... I like a good comedic touch to a hockey player, and, you know, that was nice, and a little bit of a snide comment towards the Maple Leafs, and we know, of course, the Battle of Ontario rivalry is so hot and so heated, and anything that anyone does is, you know, greeted with hyperbole and exaggeration and feigned outrage. As much as, you know, you think about some of the great things that Daniel Alfredson has done on the ice, both in the NHL and internationally as well, I'll always remember when his stick broke and he faked throwing it in the stands at the Air Canada Center after Matt Sundin was suspended for doing the same. That was a nice cheeky touch, Daniel. I loved it.
I'm so glad so many people remember that.
I thought it was great. Listen, he's always been a kind of guy to me that as much as you may look at him on the surface and say, you know, he's kind of just sort of, you know, traditional Swede, you know, don't rock the boat, nice and calm. He's always kind of had, to me, a really, really great, dark sense of humor, and that moment not embellished, but sort of was an emblem of that, I suppose, sort of was a metaphor for that sort of dark humor that I think Daniel Alfredson has deep down inside. I loved it.
Okay, next question. Lay your cards on the table for us. Who goes first overall?
Tyler Seguin. I think at the end of the day, right now, Taylor Hall is the better 18-year-old. But as a scout, you have to project out and say to yourself, now who's not going to be the best 18-year-old, but who's going to be the best 25-year-old? Which is why at the end of the day, Malkin may be a better pick than Alexander Ovechkin, even though he went number two. Right now, Taylor Hall is a better player, but I look at the way Taylor Hall plays, and I say to myself, he's doing things at junior hockey and being successful at them that he's not going to be able to have success doing at the NHL level. I mean, you look at the way Taylor Hall, you know, physically bowls over guys to get to the net. Right, the way he charges and gallops and doesn't go around guys and doesn't use players around him to get to the net. That's successful at junior when you can bully kids that are a couple years younger than you or not as physically strong as you. But you get up to the NHL, it's a different game, and that's why I'll have a look at Tyler Seguin and look at the way he uses all the players around him, look at the way he sort of uses his skill set to get around players as opposed to just physically going through them. He's not that big. Hall is not going to be a giant either. I see Seguin as being a more heady, smart hockey player and doing things that will instantly translate to success in the NHL, where I think that Taylor Hall is going to have a little bit bigger of a learning curve. And if I'm Edmonton, I'm looking at myself and saying, I've got Pajarvi Svensson on the horizon. I've got Jordan Eberle on the horizon. I need a centerman right now. I'm taking Tyler Seguin.
Quick, give us an Ottawa-Pittsburgh prediction.
Pittsburgh in six. Sorry, boys.
Oh, that's all right.
Pittsburgh in six, yeah. Pittsburgh in six, and actually Pitt's my choice for the cup as well. I'll look for them to repeat.
All right, Jeff. Well, thank you very much. We really appreciate having you on the show today, and we hope that you really enjoy the playoff hockey.
Yeah, I certainly will. Boys, you call me anytime. It's been a lot of fun.
Perfect.
Sorry about the dogs.
Oh,
sorry,
don't
about
worry
the pooches.
No, it's fine.
they're glory hogs. They always want to jump in on my interviews. They want to go on the iDesk next week. We'll see.
Before you go, what do you have coming up this week on your radio show?
It's all about the playoff previews. It's the regular cast of characters from Hockey Night in Canada. So Ron will be aboard. I think Grapes is coming on this week. Kelly, Cassie, Craig Simpson will be aboard. Scott Morrison, Tim Warnsby, all our writers. So that's the sort of mainstay. PJ Stock is always aboard every week. Pierre LeBrun from ESPN.com, Mike Milbury. So that's a sort of constant parade that goes through the program throughout the week, and then we'll fill it in with the newsmakers of the day.
Awesome. Perfect. Well, Jeff, thanks for coming on the program. We appreciate your time.
Graham, Tim, anytime, boys.
Wicked. Awesome. Thanks.
Right, so Alex Kovalev is done for the year. Some people in Ottawa are beginning to speculate that he may be done forever in hockey. He may have played his last game in the NHL. Is this too much? I mean, neither of us are doctors here, but from what I know, a complete tear of the ACL isn't exactly the easiest thing for even like a healthy 20-year-old to get over, right? This is going to take months of rehabilitation. What's going to go on with Kovalev? This is going to make for a fun summer, at least.
Yeah, he's old. But he's also like an elite athlete, right? Maybe his body recovers a little bit easier. Like, who knows? Maybe, like, look at Alfredson.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, he responds well. And then you also have individuals like Jonathan Chichu who haven't responded well to some injuries, you know? So, like, who knows? But worst case scenario, Alexei Kovalev goes on long-term injured reserve, never plays another game. That's $5 million in our coffers.
Yep, no kidding.
That's not the worst thing that ever happened to this team. And at least it's not a long-term contract.
Certainly. There's probably a lot of people out there who would call this even more than a silver lining. They would probably be calling this best-case scenario for the team. And
yeah, but people who do that are idiots.
Well,
you know, like, that's a guy's...
Tell him.
You know, like, that's a guy's health. Like, anyone who looks at the Kovalev injury and says, oh, that's fantastic, you're a fucking idiot. You are. You're making this hand motion to keep going, but that's as direct and blunt as you have to be. Like, anyone who wished that upon someone else is an idiot.
So let's talk about Matt Cook then for a minute.
Yeah, I'm glad he got hurt.
And I'm pretty sure there's going to be 20-some thousand standing ovation for Evander Kane next time he strolls
time
through
he's
Boston.
In Boston.
So maybe we can just make this a big memo to hockey fans.
They'll have him up in Boston to throw the ceremonial first pitch when the Red Sox are there next.
Of course. Maybe this, like, I'm thinking maybe if the social conditioning isn't 100% correct, but, you know, it's sports hate, right? It's sports hate, like Simmons talks about. Maybe you don't actually hate the guy in reality. Maybe you don't want to see him get hurt. But, you know, for every incident like that, you have Don Brennan writing about how Sidney Crosby should have his ankles chopped out, premeditating violence, for example, right?
Yeah, or, that's just a guy trying to get involved in a story, you know?
Either way you slice it, it's still the same argument.
Kovalev is going in for surgery, what, like next week, I think they said in this the
Yeah, I think it was 2 weeks from when he heard it.
Yeah, so let's say he goes in for surgery next week. He's not going to be ready for 4 months, let's say. So that basically takes you into September.
Right in the training camp.
Yeah, and it's like Cowan, right? Like if you spend your whole summer trying to rehabilitate your knee, yes, you might be healthy when training camp starts, but you might not have done the strength and conditioning that you need to do, especially at Kovalev's advanced age, to still be the same player. Like, he's not like Chelios riding a bike in the sauna for, like, the next 4 months, you know?
No, absolutely, I agree. So looking at training camp is fine, but that's still 4 months away from now. We've got the playoffs staring us in the face. Who's going to fill the void? I mean, there's got to be...
The usual suspects, right? McCulloch, Foligno, Matt Cullen, whose acquisition looks better and better now.
No kidding. That's really paying off.
It's going to take everybody, even the guys like Chris Kelly, if they can chip in once in a while with a goal. Every little bit helps.
Yep.
But I mean, Ottawa's not going far if their big guns don't do anything.
Yep.
And that's just the way it is.
Yeah, regardless of all that other, I mean, Jason Spezza, Daniel Alfredsson, et cetera, we know who you are. You know, they've got to perform, and maybe Alexei Kovalev wouldn't have helped them anyways. I don't know why I'm getting into this weird hypothetical hindsight nonsense. Yep, well, I guess we'll never know what Kovalev was capable in the playoffs, right? I guess you'll never get that shot. I wrote in the blog the other day that I was actually really looking forward to seeing Kovalev try and redeem himself in the public eye in Ottawa and show the people of Ottawa what he is capable of doing. We know the guy can be a playoff performer. He's proven so in the past, and it's just really unfortunate that this had to happen, and I don't know what else I can say about it.
Fair point. How about we interview Wyshynski now?
Yep, Greg will probably have a take on that, I'm sure.
Well, he just did a Puck Daddy piece, what, yesterday, I think?
Yep.
Yesterday or the day before on Kovalev? But yeah, how about we come right back with Greg, and then we can talk a little Daniel Alfredsson 1,000th game celebration afterwards.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be some consistency jokes there too.
Okay, we'll be right back.
Welcome back, folks. If you don't know this name, Greg Wyshynski from Puck Daddy Yahoo Sports. You've been living under a rock. Greg, how are you doing?
I am fine, although I would never begrudge the rock-living people in North America. If you don't know who I am, it's quite all right. I'm sure you have a lovely abode.
All right, Greg, getting right into it. With the Devils win last night and the Pittsburgh loss, the Devils, obviously you're a Devils fan. Are you breathing a sigh of relief that you don't have to face Ottawa in the first round now?
I think Ottawa's a pesky out. I mean, even without the Kovalev thing, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a second or two, but listen, it's cliche to say this about the Devils at this point, but it really doesn't matter who they play. I mean, it'll come down to whether or not Marty can you know, keep his head in the game for seven games. It'll come down to whether or not they have the secondary scoring to win. I mean, it really is a situation where I look at that roster and I say to myself, this team could either win the Cup or they can do what they did against Carolina last year. So it didn't matter to me which team that they faced in the first round. Obviously, Ottawa would have been a tougher out than the garbage at the bottom of the bracket. But, you know, now I'll regret saying that, I'm sure.
So you have no preference whatsoever if they play Montreal or Philly?
I guess for history's sake, Philly would be nice because... you know, as a Devils fan, I feel like we owe them one, losing to, me and the Devils, owe them one for losing a couple of years back when Keith Primo had a ridiculously good series, and I think it was Robert Esch who stood on his head against the Devils. So from that aspect, fine. Montreal's tough because, you know, you got the whole Brodeur-Montreal thing, and, you know, you assume, he's played well there in the past, but it can be kind of spotty. And I guess what I'm trying to say in this entire thing is it really only matters what Brodeur does. if he plays like he's been capable of playing in the past, then they're money. But again, it's just like UC Jokinen with 0.2 seconds left, the collapse in Game 7 against Carolina, some of the other series that he's had against the Rangers, for example. It's going to come down to whether or not he provides the kind of backstop that they need. And if he does, then they can go pretty far in these playoffs.
So last night, Matt Cook had a little bit of an incident on the ice. If Cook is unable to go in the Ottawa series, how big a blow is it to a team that's already, lacking in the sandpaper department?
They do lack a little sandpaper, and that's an interesting facet to that series. I don't think Matt Cook is ever going to make or break anybody's playoff series. I think he could make or break, you know, some sort of the Taunting World Series. Let's say a bunch of bars got together and had a Taunting World Series, then he'd probably do well there. But in a playoff series, it doesn't really matter if he's there or not. With the Penguins and in having watched them for the last month, the really interesting thing about them is the Jekyll and Hyde nature of their lineup with Malkin in or out, and I think his health is the biggest concern. The two biggest concerns of them are his health and whether or not Fleury has what I like to call Chris Osgood syndrome, where he can look completely pedestrian in the regular season at times and then snap to and become a great playoff goalie, which I think he's sort of done historically. And if he can do it again this time, then I think they're going to be in really good shape. I mean, he's such a key for them, and he was such a key for them last year.
Going with the Kovalev thing, there are people saying that he might never play again. Do you view his loss from the Ottawa lineup as big of a deal as guys like Don Brennan are making it out to be?
I can see where people would think it is a significant loss, and not just because of name value. Like in crunching the numbers yesterday, when it was announced he was going to be done, he's a bit of a playoff performer, and you know, I think that kind of speaks to his enigmatic nature, that the guy can look awful in the regular season and then snap to like Fleury does in the playoffs, and I think he does. I mean, you look at his points per game for the last few playoff series that he had with the Canadiens, and it's nearly a point per game. That said, I mean, he's clearly not the player that he was back in January or February for this team. So if you say that his loss is devastating for the Senators, you're basically doing that theoretically. There's nothing concrete about where this team is with him in the lineup versus where this team is with him out of the lineup, because there's nothing concrete to say that he was going to all of a sudden catch fire again. And, I mean, there's no doubt that when he's good, that Ottawa's better. I mean, you look at their record in January versus their record in March, and, it's pretty obvious. But I don't have any faith that Kovalev would all of a sudden reverse course and become that player again. I think if you're bitching about him being out of the lineup and saying that's the death knell for Ottawa, that's completely theoretical. It's not based on anything but that.
I think that the idea of Kovalev standing out in the playoffs is, you know, it's very wishful thinking and backed by a lot of hope. But what is Ottawa going to have to do in order to upset the Pittsburgh Penguins this year?
Pittsburgh's vulnerable. Well, you look at the games that Pittsburgh's played against the Capitals, right? I mean, they are vulnerable. They're a team that you can knock on their heels a little bit. So you're going to have to really come at them in waves, which may or may not be something that Ottawa can do offensively. I don't know. But the thing about the Penguins that's essential is that you can't let Crosby get on his game and start cycling the puck and taking over. And ditto Malkin. I mean, that's their lifeblood right now. Those are the two guys that are obviously going to be the engine for that team. And you've got to check those lines into oblivion, because otherwise you're not going to win the series. I happen to think that Pittsburgh is very susceptible to a first-round knockout. I really do. I mean, a lot of people aren't going to be on that bandwagon because, A, it would mean giving Ottawa respect, and, B, it would mean giving disrespect to the Penguins, which are two things that almost never happen in the mainstream hockey media. But in watching them for the last month, and granted there was a lot of games where Malkin wasn't there, they just don't seem like they're all on the same page, and it certainly doesn't seem like the moves that Ray Shiro made at the deadline are having the same sort of kick in the behind thing that they've had in the last couple of times he's made a big deadline move. I don't think Ponikrovsky and Leopold, even though Leopold's been pretty good, have been the necessary jolt that they've needed to really kind of get them in playoff mode.
Do you think the complacency is kind of set in Pittsburgh a little bit?
I think it's tough to get fired up for back-to-back. I mean, especially when you're not a team that's basically a group of professional assassins like the Red Wings, where they've been through so many of these wars, they know how to kind of work it emotionally. I mean, the Penguins, I think last year, were motivated by a lot more than just winning the cup. They were motivated by having lost the cup. I mean, they were motivated by, having to play the Capitals in the semifinals. There was a lot of emotional investment last year that I don't think is there this year because you're the champion. And then the other aspect of this, and I don't know how to quantify it, but I've heard enough people bring it up that there might be something to it, is the fatigue factor. I mean, they played a lot of hockey last summer, and a lot of those guys played some hockey during the Olympics too. So you've got some miles on the engine right now, and maybe that factors in or maybe it doesn't, but I think that there's something to be said for that.
Did you watch Daniel Alfredson's 1,000th game celebration?
No, I didn't. And honestly, I got to be honest with you. Like, I appreciate the outpouring of affection for Alfredson, I know it's a very, very big achievement. I just don't care about 1,000-game things. I just don't. I mean, I don't. Maybe that's just me. I don't see it as the incredible milestone that other people do. And maybe it's because we're covering the Modano thing and the Tkachuk thing, and we're seeing the number of games they've played and the kind of ceremony that's existed around their retirements. And maybe it's because, you know, in seeing Brodeur break his records and set these incredible marks and seeing the pageantry that comes with that, I just see the whole gold watch moment of your 1,000th game in relation to, say, setting an NHL record. It just comes, it's a very sort of local, personal thing versus something that I would search out and watch on center ice. And no disrespect to Alfredson on that. Just that's the way I feel about that moment.
Well, I think part of it, too, is the fact that Ottawa hasn't really had an opportunity in their relatively short history, their current history, to celebrate an event such as this before. So maybe people in Ottawa are just taking it to the next level because we've never had the chance before.
This is true. Are you trying to say that Don Beaupre didn't get his number retired?
We're still campaigning for it.
Oh, okay. I was unaware. You didn't have Troy Mallette night?
Another classic devil. Okay.
He's a Ranger. Okay, he happened to spend some time with the Devils. That man is a Ranger. You have to know that there is a certain nuance to whether or not a man is considered to be a Devil or a Ranger. For example, Bobby Holik may have been on the crash line. That dude's a Ranger.
Even though he won a cup in New Jersey?
Even though he won a cup in New Jersey and retired as a Devil, that dude is a Ranger. That dude took the money and left. He is bleeding blue.
But you still get to keep the unibrow, though, right?
Oh, of course. That goes to the territory. I mean, you know, they're going to hang a unibrow from the rafters in Newark in honor of Holik. Not a number.
Going back to the Pittsburgh Ottawa series, what is Pittsburgh going to have to do to shut down Ottawa?
That's a good question, because one of the deficiencies that they've had in the last month, I think, is defensively, and seeing them try to hold off the Capitals and seeing them, you know, have trouble with Detroit. They're not a shutdown team, I don't think. I think they're going to rely heavily on Fleury to take care of business. But again, I do think the essential thing for the Senators is going to be secondary scoring, which I know has become a cliche about the Senators and their problems in the last couple of years. But if you want to say that the Kovalev thing is going to have any effect, it might be there, where it's like, all right, well, he's not there. He at least gives the other team something to worry about on the second line, and on special teams. So I think it's going to come down to that. I don't see Ottawa as a team that you really have to, like, shut down per se. I mean, it's not as if they have some crazy dominant thing going on offensively. But I do think that it's going to be a case where the Penguins are going to rely on Fleury a lot for that, because I don't necessarily see them as a real big shutdown defensive team. Especially because their blue line's so different than it was last year, losing Scuderi and losing Gill. They're just a different team defensively than they were last year, too.
Now, looking at the entire NHL playoff picture here, I realize it's not set in stone just quite yet, but are there any playoffs that are set up currently that you're really excited to watch?
I'm really excited about the way the West is shaken out, only because when you basically have seven of eight teams at 100 points, it's stunning. I mean, it's stunning how deep the West is. So I think every single first round matchup's in play. I don't think there's a safe team there. And some of that might depend on the matchups. I mean, I think that, for example, Vancouver is a little bit more safe playing Nashville than they would be playing the Red Wings or the Kings. But I think every single series over there would be in play. I've long been lobbying, and we'll see how things shake out with the seeding. But I mean, a Sharks Kings first round matchup would be absolutely killer. It'd be so much fun, and it'd be in a way even more fun than the Anaheim San Jose series last year was, as far as the dynamics of that burgeoning rivalry. In the East, let me think about that. They all stink because the bottom of the bracket stinks. I mean, they really do. You know, it's just like. It's great that it worked out for the NHL that you had playoff seeding decided on the last weekend of the season, but the fine print on that is it's because all of those teams titanically sucked for a month, and none of them wanted to grab the brass ring and actually earn a playoff spot. I mean, the fact that the Boston Bruins clinched the day before the end of the season is because they didn't clinch in the 3 weeks they had to do so beforehand. So it's a little depressing to look at the draw in the Eastern Conference and to know that if there is an upset, it'll be a pleasant surprise, but more often than not, I mean, there's no reason why the top three seeds shouldn't advance because the bottom of the bracket is such an embarrassment.
For such a storybook story that's been the Phoenix Coyotes, how much of a kick in the nuts is it for them to face the Detroit Red Wings in the first round now?
Yeah, it is. It would be a big kick in the nuts, actually, because you obviously played really hard and earned yourself a playoff seed. There's no question about that. And then you earn a team that is kind of late to the party, but clearly a team that's figured itself out and has goaltending that can match yours and has some a veteran savvy that can outclass you. So it kind of stinks. But, I mean, for Colorado and for Phoenix, it's all icing on the cake now, isn't it? I mean, the seasons that they had, I think, are reward enough. And you know, you hate to say that about teams that are in the playoffs. Like, congratulations, you know, it's great to be nominated. But seriously, like, does anybody really look at those teams and be like, you should be sad and depressed for having lost in the first round? Hell no. Making the playoffs is their reward, and they should be damn proud of that. We have an interesting story coming up on Puck Daddy about Phoenix, by the way, about the perceptions of that team and whether or not people find them to be a compelling Cinderella or kind of hold it against them that they've been handheld by the NHL for the last year.
Actually, going back to that, how do you feel about the perceptions of Ottawa? Because I know last year they got bounced out of the playoffs. This year they're finally back in. What should fans in Ottawa be expecting? Like, you're an outsider. What should we be expecting from this team right now?
As far as, like, the coverage of it or the perceptions of it?
Just, like, the perception of, like, what's acceptable for our franchise right now. Obviously, it's a different stage of
development. I think the perceptions for their playoff series are based on the fact that this is a rematch from the last couple of years. And, you know, there was clearly a lot of success in one of those series and a lack of success in the other. I think people are looking for Ottawa to give Pittsburgh a tough series. The goaltending situation, I think, is something that a lot of people are focusing on outside of Ottawa, rightly or wrongly. But the thing about Ottawa from the context of being a writer in the United States, when the playoffs start, then all of a sudden the questions about ratings and NBC and versus and television start. And the fact of the matter is that Ottawa is a ratings killer for NBC. So the deeper they go, the more challenging it's going to be for them to match the numbers that they had in the last two playoffs, which have been really good. And the same thing with Vancouver. Like, as good as Vancouver is and as compelling as that team is, and I think they're one of the more entertaining teams in hockey to watch, the closer they get to the Stanley Cup Finals, the more nerve-wracking it's going to be for U.S. television executives because, you know, people just don't care. And also, the more important fact is that the ratings from Vancouver or from Ottawa don't count in the American Nielsen ratings. So it's almost like only inviting one person to the party, you know, as far as getting ratings from one of those cities. So from a completely off-the-ice perspective, that's the perception of Ottawa, in the sense that the deeper they go, maybe it's more of a marketing challenge for the league to get people excited in the States.
So shifting away, Greg, a little bit from teams in the playoffs, let's talk about two teams that have a lot of controversy surrounding them right now, who did not make the playoffs. Who do you think is in more of a mess right now, the Calgary Flames or the Toronto Maple Leafs?
The Calgary Flames by far. I mean, the Leafs at least go into the offseason knowing exactly where their problems lie. Their problems lie up front, and Burke's going to have to address that. I think he thinks that Kadri is going to be a solution at center, but he knows he has to go out and get himself a top six, you know, winger. So with that in mind, they know what they need to do, and then maybe the only question about that team is whether or not Wilson's actually going to be a guy who can win in Toronto or not, which, I mean, I've seen that story written a few times in the last couple of days too. Calgary is questioning the very foundation of its franchise right now. They're questioning their GM. They're questioning their coach. They're questioning whether or not they should trade one of the most legendary players in the history of the team for a draft pick. I mean, you get to that point, and it's like, well, Jesus, just shut the doors and burn the arena down. I mean, it's at that level of self-examination and questioning the direction of the franchise for the Flames, which is a little bit nuts for a 9 seed, but completely understandable in the way that this season kind of ended in such disappointment.
Greg, we're going to go to our quick hits segment of the interview now. Is that okay with you?
Oh, shit. What does that do now? What does that do? What is a quick hit?
We're just going to ask you, like, a series of questions, and you just give us, like, you know, first thing that comes to mind.
Thank God. That's nothing like world history.
No. You know. No.
All right, good.
Sorry, man. sorry to put you on the spot and scare you like that.
Yeah. All right, Greg, first one. Who is the team that is most likely to get swept?
Boston.
Mike Modano, certifiable Hall of Famer.
By far.
Alfredson and Tkachuk.
The Hall of Fame is a tough question for me because I would put in like five guys from every generation. I think the way things have gone, there's a very good chance that Alfredson will be a Hall of Famer, but Tkachuk may not be.
Tyler or Taylor, and who's picking them?
Well, that all depends on where the ping pong balls fall, isn't it? If I had to make a pick, I'd pick Tyler, based on position and based on everything I've heard about the guy having more upside.
Senators versus Penguins. Give us your prediction.
Well, I haven't really made formal predictions yet. You know, it takes like days of number crunching and supercomputers for me to do that. So speaking from the heart rather than the head, I would probably go Ottawa in six.
So, Greg, we're looking to rile up some Penguins fans in a lighthearted way during the course of this playoff matchup. What's the best way to do that?
Well, obviously the most direct way would be to sing the praises of Alex Ovechkin. let's see, what else really ticks off Penguins fans? Singing the praises of the Washington Capitals works, too. That always works. Also, talking about Mike Green, that also works pretty well, too. Beyond the Capitals, the best way to rile up Pittsburgh fans? I don't know, because honestly, like, Pittsburgh fans are really kind of content right now because they won the Cup. It's going to be hard for them to really, you know, reach the level of agitation and ire that I've seen them reach in the past because they're just like, we won last year. If we don't win this year, well, then we won last year. So I don't know if you can really agitate them all that much.
Well, Greg, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on. We enjoyed having you on.
I wish you luck in the playoffs. I think it'd be exciting if Ottawa made a little bit of a run, but
I'd say the same for your Devils, but my words would be hollow.
Well, nobody wants the Devils to win. We ruined hockey, right?
But you gave us that one good Seinfeld moment, though.
Well, the Devils have contributed more than a few things to hockey that are good, right? I think, probably. Marty's been good, right?
That should have been for hockey. That should have been a quick hits question.
What the Devils contributed to?
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess we've done some good things. I don't. Maybe not.
They have nice uniforms.
Pretty arena in Newark.
Yeah, they do have nice uniforms.
We tried to revitalize Newark from being a murderous hellhole. There you go. That's a good thing.
Yeah, I think the Swamp's a pretty cool nickname too. I like that.
Yeah,
it's something.
So is Mickey Mouse, but we've forgotten about that as well.
All right, Greg. So what do you have going on this week on Puck Daddy?
Previews, and all sorts of fun. And our picks will probably be Wednesday. And it'll be an exciting time. I mean, it's good to finally have the playoffs here because, you know, at some point it just needs to just start, and it's gotten to that point. I think every hockey fan knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, definitely. It should have ended 10 games ago.
There you go.
But Greg, thanks for coming on the program. Hopefully we'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Take care.
So Greg wasn't too fond of the 1,000th game celebration. It wasn't Alfredson specific, but
he basically called it a watch ceremony.
Yeah, What do you think?
Nice jersey out of it. I like that Forlunda jersey.
You like that?
Yeah, it was a nice touch. Erik Karlsson bringing it over to
What did you think of last night's events?
Well, I think, like I said with Greg, right, it's in, this is one of the first times Ottawa has had a real chance to celebrate a player on their team. I mean, we haven't retired any modern-day Senators numbers or anything like that. We haven't won a Stanley Cup. So these types of events are a big deal for Ottawa because we haven't had them before. And maybe they are a little bit trivial, you know, it'd just be like giving someone an award for playing, you know, their 100th game or whatever. But it's a huge accomplishment, right? Everyone has done this to death over the past 2 weeks, right? Like, it's been nothing but Alfie Love Fest in the media and in the streets and at work. So I think that you absolutely have to honor the guy. Maybe it was blown out of proportion a little bit, but I think it's great to see everyone, you know, bonding together, saying great things about Alfredsson, hearing, and it's been really interesting too, hearing his peers talk about his style of play. Like we even heard Derek Roy talking about how he grew up watching Alfie and really respects him as a player. And, you know, you never hear that side of the hockey biz, at least we don't, and I thought it was great.
I look at Ottawa's roster, and I mentioned this in like one of the blog pieces I wrote for Alfredsson's 1,000th game, and I said, yeah, we've had a lot of skilled guys over the year, probably more skilled than he was at putting up points. Guys like Hossa, Havlat, Yashin, Heatley, Spezza, you name it, but he's the guy who's been here the longest, you know? Like, out of all those skill guys, all the great players who've come through Ottawa over the past 20 years, almost 20 years now, Alfredsson's been the one guy who stayed. And he's taken pay cuts to do it. He's taken deferred salary. He's done whatever has been needed. He's essentially been paid below market for the past, 10 years?
Yeah, I don't know if he's ever been paid a fair paycheck in his life. He's earned every paycheck, but...
And he came out last week and he said that he wants to stay in Ottawa once his playing days are over.
Yeah. Do you think that's a signal that he will remain with the organization?
Oh, in some capacity, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. I was at a bar watching the game. The crowd went a little bit quiet for the speech. I could hear it. It wasn't totally inaudible to me.
Is this when Alfredsson lost his spot?
And this is when Alfie lost his spot. I guess some Yahoo in the crowd yelled out, "Alfie, we love you," and threw him off a little bit. That's cute. Would have been nice to if we had a nice big scoreboard for that wonderful video display that I'm sure Mr. Klingauer put together. There was more than one line at the table I was sitting at in reference to the fact that we were watching the hockey game on a better TV than the people at Scotiabank Place were.
And that damn in the event. I think the one thing that stood out in my mind from last night's game was CBC panned to one of the luxury suites at Scotiabank Place, and there was Kovalev looking dapper in his suit. And talking to Mr. Kovalev,
I know,
was Mike Foligno, who was decked out in an Alfredsson shirt. And I thought that was absolutely hilarious. There's like a guy who has absolutely no affiliation to this organization beyond his son, Nick, playing. And there he was, sporting an Alfredsson t-shirt. I thought that was really neat.
Standing beside, like, it obviously creates a nice visual juxtaposition on the screen, right? Seeing this man in a t-shirt beside, you know, essentially a Russian fashionista. Right, he's a good dresser, right?
Yeah, made him. Yeah,
he's no Ray Emery or Shaq or anything, but I mean, the guy's a good dresser. So what's next? What's gonna be the next big Sens celebration?
Good question. Hopefully, a first round playoff win. I don't know. Like, you look down this lineup. Maybe a guy like Chris Phillips stays in Ottawa if you're looking for like comparable games played situations.
Yep.
Maybe a guy like Mike Fisher. I think Phillips
has got
probably
years
on him. He's probably like 800 games in or something like that by now.
I have absolutely no idea. I'm not even sure if I could comment on that.
But, yeah, like, he's under contract for another 2 years, so he should hit that milestone with Ottawa.
Yep.
And, yeah.
Graham, let's have it. We've asked everyone today. We've heard their predictions. Greg picked Ottawa. Jeff picked Pittsburgh. Who are you going to pick?
I think Ottawa has a very, very, very good chance to win this series.
It's going to sound like a cop-out no matter what you say, so just say it.
I'll say Ottawa in 7.
Okay, I'm gonna go Ottawa in 6. Sure, they're probably gonna lose a few games. Okay, Graham, what do we have going on this week?
In terms of the vlog, I think we've reached a conclusion in the Jared Cowan autographed jersey T-shirt contest.
Yep,
that's a mouthful.
You don't have to write that anymore.
No, don't have to write that anymore. So I'll be doing a follow up to that. Playoff predictions primer.
Playoffs on Wednesday.
Playoffs on Wednesday, I think, right?
Yep. Podcast on Thursday.
Podcast on Thursday. Other than that, maybe pick a fight with, let's say, some Pittsburgh bloggers. Like, I don't know.
Sounds like it's going to be hard to do.
No.
What Craig was saying, we're going to have to really dig deep to do this one.
I'd be uncomfortable picking a fight over some Washington stuff, though. Like,
yeah, it's trivial, right?
It's like, why would some Ottawa guys care about what Ovechkin's done against us, you know?
Yeah, it'd be like them bringing the Leafs to the table.
Unless it's like Crosby can't hit 50.
Yep, that would be okay if you got stuck right before. Stuck at 49.
But I think the draft lottery is also going on this week, too.
It's Tuesday, isn't it?
Yeah, right before the playoffs.
That's great.
So
I can't wait to read the Toronto Sun on Wednesday.
We can make fun of that as well. But yeah, other than that, I'm just looking forward to the playoffs starting.
Here's hoping.
Yep. Anyways, thanks for listening to the podcast. Thanks to Greg Lucius and Jeff Merrick from Hockey Night Canada for coming on the podcast. Stay tuned. Keep reading.
Take care.
We're out.